Hello and welcome to Think Ahead, a London Business School podcast, which offers evidence-based discussions and insights to help you navigate big business issues. I'm Julian Birkinshaw, Professor of Strategy and Entrepreneurship and Vice Dean at London Business School, as well as the host of our Think Ahead podcast series. This month at LBS, we've had a big focus on the impact and opportunities that AI stands to make on the business world. And in this podcast, we are looking at AI's impact on business and society. We held a Think Ahead event on the business implications of AI, featuring Michael Jacobides, Professor of Strategy and Entrepreneurship at London Business School, Arka Dar, Product Lead for OpenAI, Giuseppe Stigliano, CEO, Spring Studios, and Claire Mortimer, at Business Transformation Services Lead for UK and Ireland, IBM. At the event, we received lots of questions from you, over 150 of them. Combined with the thousands of interactions with our LinkedIn polls, we've seen lots of excitement and engagement from our London Business School community. Thank you for getting involved. Today, I'm joined by one of our AI experts and leader of our new programme on Next Generation Digital Strategy, Professor Michael Jacobides. Hello, Michael.
Hello, good to be with you.
It's great to have you with us, Michael. I've got loads of questions for you, and I think you're going to have a couple for me as well. But let's start with a straightforward one. Everybody knows about ChatGPT. Most of us have tried it out. Most of us are absolutely flabbergasted at the quality of the answers it provides. Just for the, you know, for the non-technical people, just help us understand how it works. How does it give, you know, beautiful prose answers to pretty much any question you ask it?
Well, if you think about AI, it was computational statistics, essentially. It is the use of data to be able to get the right answers, and it was trained on data without using pre-specified ways. And it had grown, and up until 2 years ago, most of the interest in terms of AI was on big data. But what happened is that there was this branch that started emerging about 4 or 5 years ago, which was generative AI. And what it does is that it is able to create classifications and be able to take some instructions and train itself on data so that you can tell it what you want. And what's impressive with generative AI is that it uses lots of this analytical work to translate data. And when we say data, it is not just words and understand how to put words together, but also images. And now you have seen the emergence, for instance, in ChatGPT for V, which includes visual images. And you are able to get answers that are specific to the content that you suggest, to the style that you suggest, and it keeps improving, knowing what exactly you need. Right. The way that it works is through association, so it is able to understand how to bundle things together, and it is trained on data to make these bundles better and better, closer to what you want.
So an example, I mean, I was using it recently. I had to write 1,000 words on the origins of cloud computing. And, of course, I asked ChatGPT, and it gave me a completely coherent answer. I then prompted it and adapted it, and I ended up with a text. What it's doing there is basically kind of borrowing all sorts of previous texts which were about cloud computing. It's bundling them all together. It's sort of mashing them up and coming out with its own sort of unique set of words around them.
It is, and it does another thing which is even more useful. You give it guidance, it is the prompting, and you can tell it what you want. So out of this huge mass of knowledge around cloud computing, not only will you say, how do I select it, but also in what form do I get it? Right. You can ask it to rap. Mm-hmm. You can ask it to write in prose and speak in the language of Chaucer. It has the ability of both knowing what you want and presenting it in the style that you need. And if you think about it, this is a big part of the intellectual work for which people spend a lot of time doing things, including going to universities or business schools.
Right. So give us some examples of the best, shall we say, use cases where you've seen dramatic productivity improvements. I mean, I've just briefly given an example of me writing a simple text for my students, but there must be other better examples.
Well, there are examples in all manner of settings. So if you think about business problems, if you want to create a new product or a new campaign, it can come up with new ideas. Again, think that generative AI essentially recombines. Right. And innovation is based on recombination on the basis of some criteria. So it is particularly good in doing that. Mm. I think that if you want to create an advertising campaign, for instance, you can tell it in pure declarative sentences what you want, what is the target population, and it can even create the images. You can combine it with DALL-E or other programs that are able to recombine them, and presto, within 6 hours, you will have something that a traditional advertising agency would have to get people to organize, to find the concept, to find the people who would come in the shoot, to organize the hotels, to fly them over. It would be raining because it's London. Get them another hotel and then put them all back together. Well, you can do that now in an automated way. Or if you want to think about a business problem, you can give it financial statements. You can give it the business plan and then say, I'd like to find ways of increasing my growth rate or increasing my ROE.
So a lot of people are confused about this point, right? Because they know that it's trained on previous data. Therefore, by definition, it can't kind of create anything that's sort of outside of the box of data. And yet you're saying it actually can be quite innovative in its own way. How is it innovative, given that it can only, by definition, actually work within the confines of what it's been trained on?
Well, that's a fairly deep question in terms of what is innovation. And innovation quite often is recombination. Yeah. Innovation is being able to understand a pattern that exists and you apply it in a novel setting in order to come up with an idea. What it does is to create things that can be innovative. Now, that said, I think that while it benefits from having a broad spectrum of data, it will inevitably give cool, innovative ideas that people would not have thought of, but still within a given range, because it will think more or less alike. Mm-hmm. This, though, gives you a terrific benchmark. So the way to think about it is as if you have someone who just can go through the motion of being really clever and come up with ideas, which many times can just be great. Other times may not be so good. And here we're going to what I think is the tricky bit with generative AI, which is that there are things that it's really good at and things that it is less good at. Mm. If you think that what it does is to find ways of recombining it, if you tell it, hey, let me ask you to do a particular recombination in an area that I think would be great because I kind of know what it is, I think it's going to give you a great answer and an answer that you would have spent a lot of time of someone quite experienced and expensive to do. On the other hand, there may be some things that that Gen AI does that are not quite as good. So there was a recent experiment that was done by some of my colleagues in the Henderson Institute and BCG and researchers in Wharton and Harvard and other places that looked at how the use of ChatGPT actually was able to change the productivity of consultants. So what they found is that there were increases in the quantity, in the slides, in the presentations, in coming up with a cool new product design, which were anywhere to, you know, in the 20s up to 40% more. Productivity was around 12% more. But when you asked it something that was designed to have a given answer, it actually scored less well than humans. And what's worse, people believed it. Right. And believed it because it can kind of tell you the story in a convincing way. Right. You're looking at the computer, you're like, oh, it does all that creative stuff convincingly. It must be right. What's even more pernicious, people who were trained and were told, okay, I'll tell you, there are some limits to how well technology does, were fooled even more because they thought that they could sort out what's useful and what's not. And in essence, they were doing the equivalent of being asleep at the wheel in a more sophisticated way. So it's terrific, but at the same time, there's some limits to just what it can do. And this is the area that we're trying to tease out now.
Yeah. No, it is fascinating that, as you say, it's very plausible, but it's sometimes wrong. And I do want to come back to that point about why it's sometimes wrong. But to move on that point, so it is very good at raising individual productivity. And Arka Dhar, who I know you interviewed a few weeks ago, he's part of the OpenAI product team. I mean, he uses the expression that it excels at mediocrity. In other words, it's really good at bringing up the lower performers to a decent level. Is that your understanding as well?
All of the experimental evidence suggests that it is better for the people who are lower down in the distribution. It reduces the variance significantly, and that's simple. If you're a little bit lost, clutches are very useful. If you're already great, clutches, well, they can be good, but not necessarily so. It varies in the nature of the task that you look at. Sometimes everyone is helped just a bit, but mostly the people that get the most help are the people who are a bit further down. But again, that depends on what it is that we're asking to do and how we're evaluating it.
So we've talked a lot about how it is a really good sort of assistant, as it were. You know, it's sort of super smart in terms of it's got access to lots of information. We can't completely trust it, but it operates very obligingly. It does everything you tell it to do. If you then move to productivity at the organizational level rather than each of us individually benefiting, how are organizations thinking about that? Because I can imagine that there is some potential for using generative AI to help organizations work more effectively in the round, as well as it just helping individuals.
Okay, this is where it becomes really exciting for a couple of different reasons. The first reason is that Gen AI may challenge the very business model of some organizations, and some are going to be much more challenged than others. Earlier on, I was speaking about the challenges that you may have if you are a traditional advertising agency, and all of a sudden you're like, well, hang on a minute, why do I even need them? Right. If I can just use words, and rather than, you know, wear thick trimmed glasses and cool clothes and know all the cool people, I can just do that very geekily have a computer do the work for a fraction of the cost. Why do I need it?
Right.
And there are existential questions that I'd love to ask you as well in terms of, what do we in a business school do? If people need to get the lingo, and if the lingo is offered by ChatGPT that can go through the motions of doing the things that we tell people that they have the seal of approval that they understand, what is the contribution that we have there? So I'll want to ask you a question about that next. But where it gets really interesting is that beyond this question of the existential question to professions, to business models, to people who do certification in particular, who I think need to rethink, what is my value add to society? How do I benefit? There is a question of what happens on the productivity.
Right.
Now, I'll speak about productivity next, but first, let me ask you on that topic. Because one of your hats is being the vice dean at London Business School, and you engage with the students. Mm. How are our students doing it? And how do we as an institution maintain our relevance in a world of AI?
Well, thank you. I mean, you're right. The very first, of course, I heard about ChatGPT back in whatever, early December last year. And my immediate reaction is, oh my gosh, you know, how are we going to assess our students anymore? Because most of us write these assignments, take-home assignments, which the ChatGPT can answer at a passing level in 3 seconds flat. So what we first of all did was we agreed as faculty that we were going to change how we assessed our students. And we wrote a new kind of code of conduct for the students saying, look, we know you're going to use this stuff, but make sure you acknowledge it and make sure you understand what it is you're getting into. And then we decided to embrace it even more by actually saying to the students, and we do this in every orientation class, we say, we know you're going to use this. We therefore encourage you to harness it in all its strengths. In other words, make sure that you use it wisely. For example, don't just use it to write an assignment. Use it to help you think through all the different applications of the learning that you're meant to be getting in a number of different settings. Use it actually to provide feedback on your thinking. I mean, what if you actually wrote something yourself and got ChatGPT to evaluate it? I mean, learning and reinforcement and challenge, this is all part of what makes you a more effective student. So we haven't got all the answers yet, but we are deliberately kind of encouraging our students to push on it. And you know the analogies. I mean, the original pocket calculator, you know, people tried to ban that because it was going to take away our mental arithmetic skills. But the world needs pocket calculators. It just becomes part of your arsenal. That is going to be the way that we think about it from now on.
Well, and I'd say with my other hat as a faculty that I think that part of it is a challenge for us and how we're going to use it in the classroom. One of the things that I'm thinking of doing in a course I'll be teaching in December on turnarounds is to use it in class by asking people to try to convince ChatGPT that is going to be role-playing particular parts of the organizations for them, grumpy CFO, overly ambitious CEO. Yeah. And the learning is not going to be the interaction, but what worked and what didn't, and what can we understand. So I think that what's going to be fascinating in organizations is as they move beyond the ChatGPT or any other Gen AI as a productivity tool to start to integrate it to see how they can increase the value that they bring to their constituents, to their stakeholders, and that will require redesign. And that's where we're going to the trickier bit. And it's trickier because most organizations have got a complex set of requirements.
So the big famous digital companies, of course, they're already embracing all this stuff. This actually makes them even stronger. Is that your hypothesis?
Well, not only are they embracing it, they quite often are trying to integrate it in ways that will cement their power.
Yeah.
So what you have seen is that the big tech companies are making moves to absorb part of the innovation that has happened in a more decentralized way. Lots of people left from Google to create organizations, including OpenAI. Yeah, but OpenAI now has a massive investment from Microsoft to the tune of $10 billion. And Anthropic, which was a spin-off on OpenAI when the engineers who were idealistic said, we don't like corporate power, created their own company, which they don't like corporate power, but they did like $4 billion that was given to them by AWS, a big part of Amazon. So we are moving in a world, and the Competition Market Authority just launched an investigation of what will AI do to the potential inequality of competition in terms of businesses themselves.
Good. I'm going to take us back to some simpler questions, if that's okay. We know that generative AI will often give us facts which are not facts. I mean, things which are dressed up as facts but were actually made up. We know it's sometimes, as you say, hallucinates. It comes up with kind of stuff which no one quite knows where it comes from. We know it even comes up with things, some stuff which is borderline legal, amoral or whatever. And I know that the companies behind them are trying to sort of prevent that. But help us a little bit with these ethical concerns in terms of we've created a bit of a monster here. We don't know quite where it goes. What are some of the specific sort of worst examples that you've seen of where it goes wrong, and what can we do to keep it in check?
Well, that is a huge question that has a number of different sort of facets to it. The first thing to say is that I think that in terms of the products, we have seen some remarkably benign AI so far, but we don't quite know what we don't see.
Right.
The companies that are doing it are more idealistically driven, and there is, if you speak to the people who are those who are behind their production, I think that they do want to create some criteria and ensure that there are guardrails. And there are very strong guardrails right now because, of course, if you think about the power that AI has, you could have people who would be able to make the entire world blow up. I mean, there was the famous example of a nice way of ensuring that we would end global warming The only problem is that the byproduct was a process that would deprive us of oxygen and we'd all die. I mean, you know, you need to say, yes, I'd like the objective, but there are some limitations.
So OpenAI, the company behind ChatGPT, is working extremely hard behind the scenes to keep it on some guardrails, if you like. And there's lots of people out there, hackers, if you want to call them that, who are doing their best to break it. I mean, I assume
there is some of that. We don't quite know the exact details because, you know, what exactly is immoral and what is a deeper objective depends on how loony and self-delusional one may be.
Right.
And I don't have the information of what happens in the darkest corners of the development community. It is, though, interesting to see how unanimous people in the AI world are that we need to find some way of regulating them. And I think that the analogy that I have heard being given is, we have done so in the past for things like nuclear energy. Right. We don't quite allow people to run away with it. And I think that the way that one of the optimistic ways in which we are considering that this could work is that those who are doing these foundation models that create a lot of embedded assumptions and guardrails which are explicit in what should we allow the technology to do and what should we allow the technology not to do should be very tightly regulated at a basic security level.
Right.
Now, this is one thing, which is we should not allow them to be used for a bad goal. And again, biochemical warfare and nuclear power has been regulated quite tightly. Will we be able to do that?
Yeah.
Possibly.
Yeah.
It is partly a technical question. Here's the weird thing. There is right now an open question we don't quite know the answer to in terms of whether the ability of making better and better AI is going to require the same amount of scale, which means that those who can produce it are recognizable or not.
Yeah.
And the other thing that's going is the geopolitics of it, because everyone wants it to be safe, but everyone wants to be on the winning team.
Yeah, I mean, the cat's out of the bag, right? You can't just say, let's sort of suppress this, because what happens in America or Europe, you know, is to some degree in competition with what might happen in China or Russia or whatever. So it seems to me regulation is the answer. And I am personally an optimist that the regulators are acting judiciously on this. I don't know if you agree
And I think that there is a lot of regulation that is happening already. And I think that we have to learn from each other's regulation. You were speaking about China. I think that China was the first really far-reaching regulation of AI, sort of much with significantly more power than the one that we've seen in the EU and being discussed in the UK, including the first few people who have been imprisoned for presenting a fictitious event as true. Now, the skeptics are saying, what is true and what is not true, is this something that also has to do with the views of the Chinese Communist Party or not? And, you know, who knows? But I think that there's going to be a regulatory experiment that is unfolding. I think that there is a great willingness to regulate, but the regulation that we're speaking about is to ensure that we do not create weapons of mass destruction in a pragmatic sense, allowing people to do crazy things with the world around them.
Yep.
There are other facets of regulation, including competition, because, again, we are speaking about a world that is becoming more uneven, and there are questions of what exactly do we want to achieve with regulation. And I think that some of the issues which are not just debated, but also used with a big dollop of populism in the political debates in terms of what should be the principles that AI have in terms of the way that you report and treat minorities and so on and so forth, are things that we will need to confront. And it's going to get hairy.
Indeed. Let's talk briefly about AI's impact on society. You've already talked about the fact that many tasks will become obsolete. clearly, if you're a big professional services company or whatever, you're going to need fewer people doing a lot of those more basic clerical type jobs, possibly even fewer.
It's not just the basic jobs.
No, indeed, and it's professional jobs as well.
And I would say this is an unusual technology in the following sense. Most of the way that technologies have been introduced is you start lower down the pecking order, and once you go to the more complicated stuff, you kind of stop. Here, you know, being a massage therapist and being a landscape sort of gardener are the things that are the safest ones in the sort of studies of jobs and impact from AI that can be. It is the white-collar, creative sort of, you know, again, we're speaking about advertisements or consultants or to some extent people who do the basic knowledge work, including in any profession that has diagnostics, that are starting to feel the pressure. So it is unusual.
Exactly, and I think that's exactly right. And as you say, there are certain types of jobs, particularly those involving the human touch, you know, nurses and social workers, for example. I mean, it is inconceivable that AI is going to take those out of their roles anytime soon. So our advice to the, you know, the bright young students at London Business School and elsewhere in terms of what personal qualities they should be working on. They need to work on their bedside manner. They need to work on being good with other people. What else do they need to work on to assure themselves of the future?
Well, I think that the way to think about it is to not look only at the threat of substitution, but the opportunities from augmentation. Right. What do I mean? The easy way to think about these technologies is what is going to be substituted and where will I be redundant? It's the example that you said before. I was terribly good at doing basic arithmetic and at remembering 64 times 73 and getting it in a split second. Indeed. The computer came, oh my God, my life is lost. Yeah. Well, that's not so much of a problem. This is the substitution of one task by a machine. Yeah. It becomes a bit trickier because some things like memorizing, understanding, remembering the arithmetic were also good surrogates of your general IQ and ability to contribute. Yeah. So the open question there is how will we adapt as a society and whether the things that make you a good student will continue being used effectively. But this takes us to the second bit, which is that in addition to thinking about what you can substitute from your skills with what AI does, the real value from AI is the way that you can augment your skills with AI. AI exists, but it has limitations. Understanding the limitations and working with the limitations that AI has and seeing how you can complement it is the way that you will be able to add value. I think that my guess is that you will need an unusual mix of being technically, if not sophisticated, technically intuitive, understanding what AI can do and what it cannot, and then having the drive to be able to put things together and create a bundle that's going to be effective. That's so I think that entrepreneurship, agency, and understanding how you will do the alignment is crucial. This is something that AI will not be able to get. So I think that, you know, to go back to what I think that, you know, the bright students who would come here would do is not just be able to be polished, but be able to take things and create stuff, thinking themselves as the orchestrators of all the things that they can put together to drive a bundle that is going to be appreciated. And I think that it is this skill, this kind of muscle that's going to be valuable.
Exactly. And I've sometimes told my students at LBS roughly the same. I mean, I boil it down to creativity. I think you use the word entrepreneurship slightly different. Intuition still counts in a world of AI. Clearly, in judgment, I think you used a version of that. And then whether you want to call it empathy or relationship management or, you know, getting on with other people, I mean, that's clearly not going away. We must wrap up, Michael. It's been a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for your time. Any last short, pithy suggestion for for our students or for our listeners?
42, which people should look up if they haven't seen Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I think that you need to start experimenting with Gen AI, but mostly think about it as a tool that you need to combine with your own intuition and your own agency to make change happen. So we'll learn from your own experiments. So great, and look forward to learning from you as this experiment unfolds.
Thanks very much. Thank you, Michael, for those great insights. It's great to have you here.
It's been great fun and a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thank you, everyone, for your questions, and sorry we couldn't get through them all. A few of the questions we received this month related to AI's impact on healthcare. You'll be pleased to hear we'll be tackling this in October with the next Think Ahead event, looking at how AI innovation in healthcare will improve our lives. We'll include details of this, along with Michael's new program, Next Generation Digital Strategy, and LBS's other AI program offerings, in our show notes. You've been listening to Think Ahead, brought to you by the editorial team at Think at London Business School. Follow us here for more episodes, or find us on iTunes or Spotify. For more faculty research insights, go to london.edu/think. You can also sign up there for our free regular email newsletter to get updates on our latest publications direct to your inbox.